Good evening. James McKinney here with my Science Hour, November 8th, 2012. A big, big show tonight, a main topic that I know everybody is going to be extremely interested in, and this is something that I've been working on, this comet C2012S1 and its orbit. This past week, I came up with another astounding revelation, you might say, on where this comet is going to be at certain times, and we have to see how this develops after the Mars encounter of next October, early next October, the 1st of October, to see if its orbit changes, because a lot of activity will be happening. But, okay, given that the orbit that is currently predicted on January about 10 to 15th of 2014, so that's a year and a couple months away, and remember, just as a caveat, that January of 2013, the comet will have a remote electrical connection with Earth and the new moon passing. I'm not talking about that. I've already announced that particular electrical encounter, which may produce something significant. We don't know yet. We don't know what the strength of this comet is. It'll be the first somewhat of a test, and we might be able to see that firsthand. But the thing I discovered this past week about this comet deals with January of 2014, and an entire year later. Now, this comet, if it makes it out to this point where it's projected to be at that point based on its current orbit, that means it would have passed Mars. We will see a very colorful Mars interaction, I suspect, early October next year. Then there will be a very colorful Mercury interaction where the comet is right behind Mercury approaching the Sun. And at this point, the comet should be very well developed, and then it's supposed to go through an extreme close encounter with the Sun, whip around, and come back out, and go, then, at that point, a few months later, that'll be in November of 2013, and then a number of months later, if the comet remains on its current projected orbit, that's a supposition, that's an assumption, then it, in early January, around the 10th of January, it will begin to connect into an amazing quadruple alignment. And remember that this is at the time also when the solar maximum will be at its peak, so that we could have quite an enhanced effect here just from that alone. But here is the alignment that we're talking about. We have Jupiter out there, the big guy, which discharges an immense amount of outer space, of the plasma. It clears out quite a bit of that central solar system. The inner solar system, the comet will be up and behind Earth. And we've seen comets in this configuration before, much smaller comets than this. In fact, Comet Lee 1999, where the Comet Lee was up and behind Earth, and a new moon passing on September 6, 1999, Comet Lee produced 5 hurricanes in the Atlantic at one time overnight and over 60 tropical storms around the world total in one night. So anyway, that gives you an idea what a comet can do. But this comet will be in a very similar position relative to Earth. Earth will have a new moon passing. We're going to have an extremely good view of this comet. It'll be up and behind in the night sky. It'll be a very clear night sky, and then Jupiter will be very visible in the night sky. And then additionally, not to make things even worse, Venus has an inferior conjunction. So let me just summarize what we have here, the factors that are involved. These would be, okay, we have the Sun at solar maximum, meaning it's pumping out the maximum amount of energy, differential protons, maximizing the solar capacitor at that time. We have the comet, which has been years now at that time, January 2014, that will have been years in the making and should be fully developed at that point. We just saw Comet Lovejoy. We've seen a number of other comets after passage near the Sun come out and be bigger and brighter and stronger than before. And, of course, it's absurd to think that these are little ice balls. NASA continues on with its fairy tale science of the dirty snowball ice, the dirty snowball comet model, which is absolutely absurd. But the whole point of that is to fool the public, to keep real information from the public, so that they think comets are little poofy things and will go away. But the reality is this comet is going to be big. The nucleus apparently has to be big. Even NASA in its estimates is putting it up there somewhere in the range of Hale-Bopp. And of course the NASA estimate for Hale-Bopp was 40 miles. The real size was about probably the size of our moon for the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. So that gives you kind of a ballpark scale for the lie that NASA puts out, and you can kind of measure the real size of the nucleus just by the size of the NASA lie. The fact that they're putting it up around 26 kilometer diameter means that this comet does have a significant nucleus, possibly Earth-sized, or at least our moon-size, something fairly significant. But at any rate, let me summarize once again the multiplicity of alignment factors here. The Sun at solar maximum electrical energy. Venus at inferior conjunction, which means we are connected electrically far to the inside of the orbit of Venus, all the way from Earth. Earth then is right in the middle of all of this activity, and we have a new moon passing. I think it's on the 13th of January. Don't quote me on that, but it's right around that time frame. And so that puts us around January 15th, 2014, where that new moon is moving out of the way and the solar wind comes pounding in, crashes down and on our external plasma magnetic field that surrounds and protects Earth about 35,000 miles out to the sunward side. That comes just compressed, which drives energy down into the ionosphere, which then affects the surface level weather. Then the comet is up and behind us, fully developed, which possibly could stretch electrically all the way to Earth and all the way out to Jupiter. And then Jupiter is extending this electrical discharge all the way out halfway to Saturn. So we have an electrical discharge that's covering half of the solar system. This is unprecedented. And the comet will be relatively close in this configuration to Earth. It's not going to be a gravitational encounter. But prior to that, we will be at Earth's closest encounter to this comet, about 0.4 AU. So that would put it at about 35 million miles. And remember that the comet, if big, the coma could extend all the way to Earth from that. And if that's the case, Earth would be breaking through the shield of this comet, the shielding electromagnetic shield, plasma shield, and start connecting to the comet nucleus electrically, meaning we could have significant auroras, storm activity. And these aren't the kind of storms that just come and go, or a week-long storm like Sandy. This could be immense, and there's no way to undo these storms. Remember that the technology that I developed with the Russians in the mid-1990s to use laser satellites to steer hurricanes was designed to steer them away from harm, from harming the shores, from harming the public. They are now being used as weather bombing on the public. That just gives you the feel for the insanity of the people in charge of this planet, to take something that was designed to benefit humanity and turn it into an ugly weapon I should just quick insert here, later in the show I was going to talk about Hurricane Sandy and the fact that absolutely beyond question, it was a manipulated hurricane to provide maximum damage to the eastern coast of the United States. And to what I call it geopolitical social engineering of that area of the country, especially the northeast. And then right now being followed by a nor'easter storm, once again, just seems very unusual, but that area being pounded with snow, they're basically doing what they did to New Orleans. They're socially engineering that area to kill off the lower level populations. And so I think this is something we're going to see. It's the beginning wave of mass murder of the population. That's there's no other way to put it. Okay, so back to the alignment with C-2012 S-1 comet, January. Okay, so this brings on another factor. Since we are connecting into the region of the solar system around Jupiter, that means we could very likely get a big influx of sulfur dioxide from the area beyond Jupiter. Now, Jupiter pulls in a good deal of sulfur dioxide. That's the common chemical out by Jupiter. Remember that the 21 pieces of comet Schumacher-Levy 9 were nice, beautiful water comets until they got into the realm of Jupiter. And all of a sudden, one by one, as they moved into that region around Jupiter, they became sulfur dioxide comets, primarily sulfur dioxide with no water in their tails. Now, how did that magically happen? And, of course, NASA doesn't have any explanation for that. But when you see the pictures of those 21 pieces coming into Jupiter, they are beautiful sulfur dioxide comets. Okay, so at any rate, we are connecting with this comet C-2012-S1 in January 2014. We're connecting electrically into that region of the solar system where there's an abundance of sulfur dioxide. Okay, this is where I'm going to start to talk about the plasma effects of this comet on Earth plus the potential influx of sulfur dioxide. Now, this brings on a range. Now, sulfur dioxide would be the main chemical component, but you have the sulfur combining with hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen. So that gives you, if you're a chemist, start mixing up the soup bowl here and figure out all the chemicals that will be coming in, not to mention solid sulfur itself, solid pieces and chunks of sulfur as they solidify, coagulate, so to speak, as the sulfur comes in and Earth becomes a comet itself, because we could connect into the comet, it could excite Earth, we could literally become a comet ourselves with water influx, hydrocarbons, the oil, the rain of naphtha, and sulfur dioxide. And now let me explain. First of all, I'm just going to put a little of a side note here that I have a 2-CD set. It's one of my most recent releases, 18 hours of lectures on the physics of ancient celestial disasters. I talk about the Noah event, the Moses event, which were separated by thousands of years, both comet events. The Noah event was a great flood. There was not a lot of electrical activity. There were high winds. But we were in the comet tail for a long time. The Moses event was quite different. We had a very close approach of a large comet that eventually became the planet Venus. This is the same event spoken of by the Maya, the Quetzalcoatl event. Okay, so at any rate, I have that 2-CD set, 18 hours of lecture, which includes the philosophy and also the psychology, the actual title of 4 hours of the lecture, The Psychology of Planet X. And it goes through the entire range of psychological, from the point of view of the average person on the street to the people in control, and all various aspects of the psychology of Planet X. That's 4 hours out of the 18 hours. So at any rate, the show tonight is an extension of that CD, and this will happen when issues like this arise where I can dive into one of these topics and really get some teeth into one of these topics. And this is important because we may witness this. We may witness these events in 2014. And so then I'm also going to talk on preparedness. What would you do to prepare for this? Because if this happens, this is not going to be your average backyard picnic. You're going to have sulfur dioxide and other very volatile poison dust and gases raining into the atmosphere. Part of what I'm going to talk about tonight is why they call it the Red Hand of Death. And just basically, here's what happens. The sulfur dioxide is red. It's one of the visible components. Then you have the hydrogen compounds, the naphthas, they're called in the ancient texts, but basically oil. All the variations in oil, all the way from the very light hydrocarbons all the way up to the very heavy chains, and they're all combustible. When they hit oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere, they burn, and so you have electrical discharges occurring that can ignite them. And the ancients talked about that, the burning naphtha that rain in from the sky, and then the hail of fire and brimstone, and the hail of sulfur is the brimstone, the burning sulfur as it comes in. How does this hand, why do they call it the Red Hand of Death? The actual process, I'll quickly describe it and go into more detail, but the sulfur dioxide, and this, by the way, is accompanied by broad-scale auroras in the upper atmosphere, which are red and green and orange, and of course, these are described all over the world, as even in the very tropical latitudes, they describe the auroras. But here's what happens. When the sulfur comes in, it's going to be in streamers. So you'll have a big streamer, and the reason they come in streamers is because they're ionized. They come into the upper atmosphere. They because of the pinch effect, they are drawn together into streamers. And we saw this, by the way, in the comet of Hale-Bopp, pictures by a professional astronomer out of Florida, that Hale-Bopp had up to 17 tails at one time. These were water tails, composite, just like immense rivers of water pouring into the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. But with this comet, when it extends out to the sulfur region around Jupiter, we will be getting all the sulfur compounds, sulfur dioxide being the color orangish-red. Okay, so when these streamers of sulfur dioxide connect into the upper atmosphere, they stream down in various places, in individual locations, and when they hit the jet stream, they're going to start to move in the northern hemisphere, and in the southern hemisphere, they're going to start to move in an easterly direction, being carried by the jet stream. So they'll come down, and then they'll be manifest themselves in kind of like clouds, actually like clouds moving in an easterly direction with the jet stream, unless the jet stream is somehow affected, but I suspect our jet stream will continue to move in an easterly direction. That's an assumption, and we can't know that for sure until we actually see it. But at any rate, the sulfur dioxide will follow the upper layer jet streams and then start to individually fall down like big fingers. And it'll look like a hand. If you go into the Moses, the Charlton Heston Moses movie, they have a beautifully reconstructed animation of that in the sky. And remember that was a movie that was done as close to biblical history as possible. They show the pillar of fire. We could witness the pillar of fire, where the electrical connection to the comet actually touches down all the way to the surface of the Earth and creates a tremendous whirlwind of fire reaching up into the sky. That's what Moses described. So at any rate, in Quetzalcoatl, all of the ancient myths and legends talk about these same effects. But at any rate, that's where the red hand of death comes from. Now, why do they call it death, the red hand of death? Because once the sulfur dioxide starts to stream down, it's going to cover everything, like dust from a volcano. It's going to, or snow, it's going to cover everything. It's going to get into the water systems and pollute everything. And this is part of what I'm going to start to tell people. And we won't know if this is going to be reality or not for some time, but I'm giving you a precursor because it looks like all of the factors are in place for this to actually happen. And so my best prediction at this point, based on sound science, based on the orbit of this comet that's projected, that's a NASA thing. I'm using the orbit projected by NASA. And that it will not change that orbit. There's an assumption that it will not change that orbit when it interacts with Mars or the Sun, and that the comet will actually be able to withstand all of these possible changes and then make it all the way out to where it will be in predicted to be in January of 2014. So there's a lot of assumptions in here. We have to see what the Sun is doing. When this comet rounds the Sun, we could see the Sun go bonkers. That's a possibility because it will be at solar maximum. I mean, there's so many factors here, it's hard to predict. But given that all of these factors line up like they are supposed to be, then this is a highly possible, highly probable scenario. And so the comet up behind us would be connected electrically. At least we would be having some severe storm activity, a very unusual thing for January. I'm talking about major hurricanes, many, many, many around the world. And so the point is, how do you prepare? Well, a long time ago, you know, as for a long time I've been selling water filter products. And for a while I sold food products. I don't do that anymore because there's many available places for that. You don't have to go to my page for that. What I try and concentrate on my page are things that you cannot find anyplace else or very difficult to find anyplace else. But the two things I'm talking about here are the pre-filter, which allows you, it adapts to any of the standard water filters on the market today or up to the great big ones. But basically, it pre-filters the water from the gunk. If you have a pollution event, it pre-filters the water before it goes into your nice, clean water filters, because you can filter slop and real ugly water in a standard water filter, but then how do you clean that out? It's a real problem because you don't have much fresh water. So if your water filter is all clogged up with powder and gunk, how are you going to clean it? And you could take a knife in there, but it's gonna degrade your water filter very quickly. Additionally, if there's nuclear residue, you want to get that out before it gets into your water filter because nuclear residue would contaminate your filter elements. So you got to get that out of there before it goes, that nuclear contaminated powder. You want to get it out of the water before it goes into your nice clean water filter. And then the water filter is used to get bacteria and other sometimes chemicals out of the water if you have the carbon filters like the ones that I sell. That's what the final stage of your main water filter is for, but the pre-filter gets the junk, the gunk, the goop, and all of that, so it's called the CAMRAD oil pre-filter. So chemicals, radiation, and remember that radiation likes to attach to dust. So what you're doing is getting that dust out of there. And then oil. It'll soak oil out of water and get that out of there before it goes into your nice clean water filter. The second thing that I developed And by the way, these are unique to my webpage. You will not find these anyplace else on the planet or in this edge of the galaxy, for that matter. The second item that I sell is called the Modular Filtration and Storage System. And what it is, it's big 6.5 gallon tanks with two of the high capacity dome filters. And what happens, these have screw top lids with rubber seals. And so basically your water filter is very well sealed and contained. When you get the water filtered, you quickly put on one of the sealing lids, screw top sealing lids. You can remove the lid, put it on as many times as you want, but you can seal your water. And now if you have one of these dust pollution events with a lot of wind, you need some kind of containment mechanism for serious amounts of water, not just a couple gallons. And so as a result, I also sell extra tanks, but with the modular filtration and storage system, you get 4 6.5 gallon tanks for a total of 20 gallons of fresh water. And that's your drinking water. That's the water you would use to do sprouting. This is the water you would use if somebody has a severe cut and you need fresh water. You would have clean water, and then you could put it in a little pressure cooker. That's something I recommend everybody get, is a little pressure cooker. Uses very little energy. You can sterilize with it. You can cook a whole meal for a group of people in a little pressure cooker and then save it in there. Just run up the heat to where the pressure develops and then turn it off and leave the lid on, and a pressure cooker becomes a storage device for cooked food. You can store food up to a couple days in that and have it remain fresh. Okay, so at any rate, then the water filter products, and then always my books and DVDs and information so you understand what's going on. Because I'm just going to make a quick aside comment on the election this week. I put a note on my webpage saying don't vote, because you're just supporting this facade that we live in a democracy. We do not live in any kind of democracy. two people running work for the same bankers. So no matter who won, but I think the whole thing was fixed in the first place. I don't believe any of the election results on the federal level. I think it was just all fixed. Romney was put up there to make a good dog and pony show. The analysis is at the end is he didn't even raise any issues. He just kind of sank and let the election go to Obama. Election, but that isn't the point, who won or lost, because I don't think there is anybody who won or lost. It's all a big fraud. And so basically Obama is the new world order boy, and he's in there doing their job, and he's going to stay in there doing their job. And so all of this idea that somehow they have your best interest in mind, no, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that you don't see. But the end result, the point I wanted to make here is the very, very large turnout in voting, the very large turnout. I don't know if it was a record or not, but a lot of people, they really pumped it up and got a lot of people out to vote. And that's the key to the world controllers keeping their monopoly, because if they can convince enough people that it's important to get out and vote, then they can continue their scam. And it's because people think, well, the election is over, now we have to depend on our leaders. And that's that's the heart of the scam. So at any rate, just wanted to point that out. The thing that tells me is that a vast majority of Americans are completely under the thumb of this international banking system, and that's all you can say. And very, very, very few people really know what's going on. So if you're new to this industry, if you're new to this concept of taking care of yourself and preparing, or understanding about, say, Planet X, or understanding about the issues going on, or that comets are not dirty snowballs, or whatever your initial introduction to this is, just remember, don't bother going up and down the street and preaching this to anybody, because nobody is going to even look at you or give you the time of day, because they're off in Never Never Land. They're in the United States Disney World, is the best thing you can say about it, and sit down and get their news from the evening contrived news every night. And that's the way the United States is, and so the poor rest of the world is going to be dragged down into the depths of humanity with the United States leading the march. So, and okay, enough politicizing there, but I think I should take a break here from this topic of the Red Hand of Death, and I quick have some announcements. By the way, just as far as the products are concerned, I want to reemphasize the pre-filter and the modular filtration and storage system. They're on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And the other thing is, there is still some corn. And so, remember the corn, the seed sale, the dent corn seed, some of that is left. I put up a price of, there was a mistake on the webpage. It started out, I announced last week, that the final corn sale would be $110 for 10 pounds and $150 for 20 pounds. And so then after posting that, the way it actually got posted on the sales page was $150 for 10 pounds. So that was a mistake. And so basically in two iterations, the price came back down to where it originally was, plus $10. So basically right now it's $60, includes the $10 for shipping of the corn. So there's some of that left. And so it's still on the web page, and it's going to stay up there until it gets done selling. We have a bit left. And then also I want to mention the recalendar Sunstar clock. If you're looking for a really cool, fun, nice, and helpful present for somebody for the upcoming holiday season, get them a pre-calendar. A recalendar Sunstar clock. They're $39.95. It allows you to basically, you can set it up right now. When you get it, you should set it up and watch how it works, how it gives you the date and time on a given day, how you can understand the movement of the sun and the moon and the stars, and know the time and the date, etc. And you can, there's a star wheel which allows you to set the calendar and a clock based on the stars. And but in case of a natural disaster or some other kind of disaster, you can use this to rebuild the calendar and the clock, something that's very, very necessary, especially in case of emergency. And if ever we had a physical pole shift on Earth, it would allow you to rebuild the calendar, something that the ancients did not have the luxury of doing. These, both the corn and the calendar, can be gotten for free if you make a large enough purchase. If you have $300 total purchase on the web page, you get the calendar free. If you do a $400 purchase, you get the calendar and 10 pounds of the corn seed for free. So it's just an incentive for people to order and get the things they need and get some other benefits along with it. Also, we are finalizing the stages of putting my books into ebooks, and they may be available, some of them, by the time this I'm on the air this evening. But look for that, my books in the form of ebooks, and they will be protected. There's a technique that I've developed myself for protecting the books from being, plagiarized or copied or moved out by some unscrupulous enemy of mine. So basically every book is unique. I'll put it that way. They all look the same. And if you tried to compare them or do any other comparison of the books, they all appear the same. But everybody whose order, their book will be uniquely identifiable. And so if somebody tries to send them out in an like a mailing or some other form of distribution or puts them on the internet or whatever, we'll be able to identify who's doing it. And so that was real important. So it's a technique that I developed myself, and it's not something that, like I say, that you'll be able to detect by any of the standard methods of comparison. So each book will be unique and identified, and for the vast majority of people, that's what they want. They want an e-book. They want it in a format that they can easily take with them and read. And they're not interested in damaging me or copying the books or mass distributing the books or anything like that. So at any rate, the books will be available in e-format here shortly, so make sure you come back for that. Okay, let's see, what else? Just a quick political thing. The Dow Jones dropped 300 points the day after Obama elected, the Republicans reeling from this. And as I've always said, it's a matter of who gets the money, whose buddies are in line for the money. And I know I had the misfortune of meeting with some Republicans this past year about some business issues, not about anything with the election. But they were all crying because their cut of the pie wasn't coming their way. And it's just a matter of politics. Now the Democrats, the money flow is going through the hands of Democrats, and the Republicans have not had their greedy little hands on the money flow for 4 years, and they were very anxious to get it back with Romney. But as I said, none of this has anything to do with anything in the election. Obama was doing the work of the New World Order, and that's all that amounts to. They want him in there. He's doing a good job of getting their policies in place for the takeover of the world and the control of the public, and that's all it amounts to. But I think it's comical that these little Republicans are running out there mad because their cut of the pie won't be coming to them for the next 4 years. Gee, isn't that a shame? Okay, so let's see. Just a quick mention here. The Oregon has a deep thermal energy project where they're drilling down into the base of a volcano, and they're going to pump down superheated water and then have it superheated and come up and form steam. And this is, I think, $20 million from the Department of Energy is being used. Another long-term project that has no chance of large-scale success. Maybe it'll have success there. But the point is, it won't make a dent in the international energy requirement. It won't help anybody outside of that particular region. And it's a way to forestall the reality of alternative energy without anything real happening. Last week I talked about what's going on in the North Sea with Scotland, another project, the five-year project, that will have no significant results, but will keep the greenies plugged to their computer sets, reading all kinds of articles about how green energy is just right around the corner, but it really isn't. And we're going to be stuck with big energy control for decades and decades to come. Just a correction also. I don't know how this happened. I'm usually very astute with this, but the special that I'm on is starting tomorrow night, remember, on the History Channel. Let me get it straight this time. I had posted both on my page and on my radio show. I called it Countdown to Armageddon, and that the real name of the show is Countdown to Apocalypse. So if you just Google that, or just go to History 2. Now, its History Channel has a second channel. History 2, it's called. And the Countdown to Armageddon, the Countdown to Apocalypse is appearing there starting Friday night is the premiere. And I'm in all of a little bits and pieces in all six parts of this series, But in part four, dealing with the Hopi prophecy, I'm in more in that one. And when it excuse me, but when it comes, I can't tell you any more about the content. That's right. I have an agreement with the History Channel and the filming company that did this to not mention any content. But I'm just announcing, okay, get ready to watch this. Countdown to Apocalypse, History Channel 2, starting tomorrow night, Friday night. Look for listings in your area. I can't tell you what time or what channel. You got to look in your local listings to see when History Channel 2, the second part, or the number 2 History Channel, it's not the main History Channel, it's History Channel 2, Countdown to Apocalypse. 6-part series, and I believe I'm in all 6 parts, but primarily in part 4, dealing with the prophecies of the Hopi. Just a quick mention here on medical marijuana. 2 states, I think it was Washington and Colorado, passed legalization. They passed the legalization of what they call social use, and so I'm not sure what social use really defines, but I think that means you're not growing 50 pounds of it in your backyard. But then the DEA immediately issues a statement saying that don't get your underwear in knots about this, because it's still a federal crime. It's still listed as a number one controlled substance under the DEA. And, of course, what the DEA is doing is they're protecting the AMA, another great outfit in the United States that controls a big sector of the population. But in this entire battle is the fact that there's many uses of medical marijuana, and one of the main uses is to combat cancer. And now this is how I had it explained to me. And I, by the way, I'm not a marijuana user or have any use for it socially. But what I'm saying is that there should be research conducted on an official level with its use for cancer. And I think that back in the 30s, before it was made illegal and kept on the monster status, it was used in many aspects for all kinds of medical treatments. Well, it's not good for business. As I've talked about before, the medical industry relies heavily on cancer treatment as a method of income. I'll just tell you a couple stories. Number of people that I've known very close personally were diagnosed with cancer, sent to get chemo and surgery, and what happened is that ultimately they refused, looked for second opinions. In a number of cases, they only had infections, and other people who refused treatments lived and lived and lived, and nothing really happened. They just continued in the medical people administering to them would not give them antibiotics, but one guy did by accident get some antibiotics because of another infection, and he started getting better. His cancer, so-called cancer, started going away. So at any rate, the point here is that medical marijuana would be devastating, or any other cure for cancer. And I would use the term cure very loosely, because, as it turns out, everybody has cancer cells in their body. So everybody has cancer. It's a question of your body being able to control. When I was getting my degree, my advanced degree in physics and nuclear and solid state physics at Tulane University, I had a biophysics course. My professor was a doctor from the Tulane Medical School who studied cancer. And he told us in class, he said, we know what cancer is. It's normal cells that do not recognize cells next to them. So when they take a tissue sample and they say you've got cancer, what they really should be telling you is that your normal cells are growing without bound and forming cancer tissue. That's what they should actually be telling you. And there's a reason for it. In every particular person, it might be different or unrelated. If you smoke 50 packs of cigarettes a week for your whole life, maybe that's the cause of it. If your spouse smoked, maybe secondhand smoke. If you're around chemicals, you're a farmer, you're a person that cleaned houses or apartment buildings or something, you're surrounded by very tough chemicals and odors, and that in your skin, and it gets in no matter how you try, you're going to get some of that in your body. And anyway, the basic bottom line is whatever it is, whatever your cause of cancer, it's created small pockets of cells to stop communicating. They don't see the cell next to them, so they go, there must be a divide here. We have to generate another cell to fill the gap. So they generate another cell. Now that cell is looking for another cell over there next to it. It can't see it. So it starts growing again. In fact, this process is normal. If you cut yourself, the skin cells do this. They start growing and growing to bridge the gap. And once they say, now I'm touching another cell, they stop growing, and they actually build up a little special type of cell called scar tissue. And it's a tougher type of cell. It's a tougher type of cell. And so, at any rate, that's what cancer is. It's just a cell that doesn't recognize its neighbor and starts to reproduce. So here's what my understanding of medical marijuana, what it does. And this is associated with what people call high or something like that. There's something in there that causes the cells to start communicating. And that's why people that use it, they go, I'm one with the earth, or, you know, something. They have various expressions that indicates that they have a feeling throughout their body. Well, that's their cells all communicating at the same time. And so that's what it does, apparently. And that's why it, in a sense, cures cancer. Because it starts your cells to communicate where they were not communicating before. So this loop of understanding seems to be there, but the DEA is in there heavy-handed. They're not going to let anybody use marijuana if over their dead body. So at any rate, just a quick mention of that. Let me see if I have any other topics to cover here. I talked about the Northeastern Storm, geopolitical social engineering. There's 25% unemployment in Greece, some estimates as much as 50%. They're under an austerity program. Look for that in the good old United States. And just remember that with the current policies, the vast majority of people who still have jobs, who are working, remember that most people have succumbed in some manner financially. But the people who are still working still have houses. I don't care if you're a millionaire or if a guy making $25,000 a year, or the two of maybe a husband and wife employed, and together they make $30,000 a year, and they're living just on, you know, basic lifestyle. It doesn't matter, because your home is upside down in value. You can't move to get a new job because you can't sell your house. You're stuck. You're a slave. That's exactly what it's all about. And so whether you're a millionaire, the millionaire just has a bigger loss. But here's what's happening. There's a law that not many people know about. It's called the homeowner, how does it go again? The homeowner, it's like a benefit law that allows a homeowner to write off the income that would come from the sale of their house. And so at any rate, that law is going away December 31st, and it has not been renewed by Congress. And so it's a political football, but at any rate, the bottom line is the other half of it is Obama is saying that people who will sell their houses in the future will have to pay tax on that, the sale of their house. Remember that the house was one thing in the past that had been guarded from capital gains. So at any rate, Obama wants to tax the sale of houses. But if you sell your house and you're upside down, if the sale of the house is less than your mortgage, then you would have to pay tax on that too. So both sides of the coin, no matter who you are or what condition your house loan is in, you're going to have to owe taxes on that, on the sale of your house. But anyway, all it is a method to enslave the public, because those are the final people that still own something, that are still paying on their house, and either way you cut it, you're going to be not in good shape financially, so you're stuck paying on your house, paying and paying and paying, and finally when you get to the point when you retire or ready to drop over dead, whatever the case, that house is going to go back to the bank. You will never own your house. We are in a state of international serfdom. The entire world is indebted to the bankers, and that was the end result. It's the game of monopoly that you cannot win. They own the government, they own the court system, they own the economic, the banks, they own the laws, they create the wars, they create the terrorists, and they've got the game down. Game end. The game is over. Checkmate. And you're the one that got checkmated, and you're not going to win. So I developed a concept. I call it First Nation. What you've got to do is just get out, away, and start living your own life and living your own democracy. And don't worry about forming a group. Don't worry about preaching this to other people. Just go away and take care of yourselves. And a lot of people can't understand that. They can't understand that they're going to have to take care of themselves. And I think this new comet coming in is going to shock the world. I think when we start seeing this baby up in the sky, and it's big, and it's up there reeling, it's gonna take the lid off. And I believe that that's why all of this getting ready has been produced. By the way, this is interesting. A listener wrote in. Let me see if I can quick get up the web page here, so I can read this on the show. But basically, and by the way, I'm not a big Nostradamus fan myself. There's a quatrain, I believe it's 6-6. Yeah, that's right. It's Nostradamus quatrain 6-6. And I'm trying to quick pull it up here. Let me quick pull it up. Sorry for wasting your time here. Here it comes. Here we go. I put it on my webpage, November 5th posting. I have at the top of my webpage. It says, I am not a great Nostradamus quatrain fan. However, the following is interesting. This just in from a fan. It says, Nostradamus predicts, this is from my webpage now, Nostradamus predicts that two events will be concurrent in his prediction. The entrance of a great comet into the solar system from the constellation Cancer at the same time as the death of a pope. We already have the great comet coming in from Cancer, which is the C2012S1. Now, if a pope dies, this signifies, according to Nostradamus, the beginning of a great tribulation for Earth. And here is quatrain 6.6 that I mouse copied from the internet. Okay, here it is. There will appear towards the north, not far from Cancer, the bearded star, Susa, Siena, Boeotia, Eretria. The great one of Rome will die the night over. That's the quatrain. That's the Nostradamus quatrain. So if, and like I say, I'm not a major Nostradamus fan. I follow it. I think it's highly interesting. I'm a scientist, and so it does not factor into what I do. But I think it's very interesting, and that is a quatrain from Nostradamus. And the comet 2012-S1 is coming in from Cancer. And like I say, that was sent in from a fan. So I posted it. I thought it was interesting enough to post on my webpage and just make note of it. Because if we have a pope that dies, that will be significant in a, because right now, if you look at the pope, we're not expecting a pope to die. It's not like somebody's on their deathbed or whatever over there in Rome. So at any rate, that would be an unusual event that would kind of, once again, make Nostradamus kind of noteworthy. Okay, enough of that. So back to, and here's something too I'm going to cover, and I'm still looking into this. There's a lot of controversy on the internet. It's an object called G1.9, and the Spanish astronomers believe that this is a Planet X type object with objects orbiting it. NASA keeps saying it's the remnant of a supernova. The Russian scientists laugh at NASA, as they usually do, saying that NASA's a bunch of baloney. And so anyway, I will be covering that topic in some future shows. I just don't have time tonight, and it's a rather complex topic, so just giving you a heads up that I'll be covering that. It's called G1.9, and you can look it up on the internet and see some of the articles that are revolving around it. But my take is that the Spanish astronomers are correct, and that it is another, it is one of the Planet X objects. And now I believe we have many. I believe this object coming in right now, the C2012-S1 comet, is a Planet X type object. And so this is what I've been saying all along, that there are many of these items, objects, the many Planet X objects. So at any rate, let me continue talking now for the rest of the show about the Red Hand of Death. And it looks like I'm going to have to continue this topic next week. So once again, as the sulfur dioxide and other compounds come in to the upper atmosphere, they'll drop down until they hit the jet stream, which will bring them, they will ride along in the upper layer jet streams, just like clouds would. And they'll be kind of like just like a cloud. And then the sulfur dioxide is heavy enough, maybe when it combines with water, it will start to drop out, and it'll form like fingers. Like, take your hand, stick your fingers straight out, like horizontal, and then wrap your fingers around like you were holding a grapefruit with your fingers pointing downwards. Do that, and that's what the Red Hand of Death looks like up in the upper atmosphere, with the fingers raining down. Or if you're not a very visual person, try and get a copy of the Moses movie, the Charlton Heston, the original Hollywood movie Moses. And they have a wonderful depiction in there where they go in, the Hebrews, the Israelites go in and seal their doors and windows. And that is when the Passover occurs. So what I'm saying here is we could be in for a modern day Passover. I'm out of time. Jim McCanny, this is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.